Questions?
There's something listed in the syllabus, but it doesn't matter.
Okay.
So about the only time I'm not there is when I'm in lab. And then even then, you can usually ask me questions. So I usually get here at 8. I usually leave sometime after 5. More questions? I also take phone calls. So if you're at the other campus and you've got a question, you don't want to troop over here, you can just look at my phone number and see if you can catch me that way. I do email too, but I don't kind of immediately. A phone, obviously, you either answer it or you don't. For email, you know, I'll answer it when I get around to it. So I think I'm not going to answer the angle question because we're kind of running out of time. So for the angle question, I give you two options. So one is to talk about it after class, and another option is to talk about it at the beginning of next class. And what I tell you is that there won't be a problem like that on your exam. I mean, finding that angle is pretty tricky.
For the foot problem?
For the foot problem. Yes. Yep. Other questions? So the plan today is to do everything you've done so far this semester, except to do it while twisting, as opposed to doing it in a straight line. So long ago, we said that F was equal to MA, and now we need the same thing except with Greek letters, right? So we need to have twisting things. And I take it it's no surprise that torques are the thing that's like a twisting force, and we know that angular acceleration is the thing that's like linear acceleration. So there's a missing box to fill in. What is the relationship between torque and the resulting acceleration? And for reasons I don't know, this thing has been called I, which stands for moment of inertia. Yeah, it is a swear word. And I have no idea why it's called that. I don't, no idea. So what's true is that for rotating objects, the mass alone doesn't matter. So this obviously has a mass, but it's very easy to rotate about that axis. But to rotate it around this axis, I have to use a fair amount of torque. So in order to twist something, it's not a property of the object. It's also a property of the axis that it's rotating about. So kind of another demonstration of that, if we take a look at this setup, if I apply a force to this object, you can see it's going faster and faster and faster. There's an angular acceleration. Ooh. Well, that's interesting.
How do you calculate that?
Correctly. It'll catch again. Oh, okay. It'll actually go up then, too. It's a pretty low frictional joint. In any case, now that you've calibrated your eyeball to how fast the angular acceleration or deacceleration is with the masses out, if I take these masses and I put them closer to the spin axis, this is going to turn out to decrease the value of the moment of inertia. And if the moment of inertia is smaller and tau is the same, then it must have a much faster angular acceleration. So windmill. So this moment of inertia depends not just on the mass, but on the distribution of the mass. And there's a formula for it. If we add up the masses times the distance each mass is from the spin axis, we get the moment of inertia. Now this is, generally speaking, a complicated thing to do, right? To take every bit of material, say a sphere, and add up the distance that each piece of it is from the spin axis. So this has been done, and if you look in your book, there's a table of common objects and the corresponding moments of inertia. So for example, for a sphere, the moment of inertia is 2/5 of the mass times the radius squared. For a cylinder, solid cylinder, the moment of inertia is 1/2 the mass times the radius squared. If you look at a hoop or a pipe, all of the mass is the same distance from the spin axis, so it's going to be mr squared. So these two guys have the same mass, the same radius, but this guy has the mass that's as far as possible from the spin axis, and this one has some mass that's close to the spin axis.
What is that on the bottom? Hippo? Hippo? No, on the board.
Pipe.
Pipe or hoop.
Hippo.
Right, so this is a hoop or a piece of a pipe. So this guy's easy to twist, and this guy is hard to twist. So if we race them, the one that's easy to twist is, you know, pretty clearly going to win. The total mass of the sphere and the radius of the sphere.
Okay.
So after we talked about F equals ma, then we talked about energy, and in particular kinetic energy. So we said that the kinetic energy of something that was translating was 1/2 mv squared. I take it it's no surprise that if we have something that's rotating, the kinetic energy is going to be 1/2 I omega squared. So if we look at this kind of giant yo-yo, what we can have is a situation where we have lots of gravitational potential energy, and we can convert that gravitational potential energy into rotational kinetic energy, and we can have it oscillate back and forth as the energy goes either into potential energy or rotational kinetic energy. So we could, for example, solve the problem of rotating down this inclined plane using conservation of energy. What's happening when this thing is rotating is, when this thing is going down the plane, is gravitational potential energy is being converted into kinetic energy. Some of it is kinetic energy of rotation, some of it is kinetic energy of translation. And we just have to add all of that kinetic energy together to get the total kinetic energy of this thing as it falls. The formula for it? The usual formula. So we've always had translation, and we haven't bothered to introduce that word. Now we've got translation and rotation, and both simultaneously.
Okay. So you're saying you add them up to find it?
Yeah. So when this thing is rolling down the inclined plane, the total kinetic energy is in part going to be the kinetic energy of translation, and in part, the kinetic energy of rotation. And in fact, these things are intimately related, right? How far this thing is rotated tells you how far down the plane it's moved. It has to be the case, because of radian measure, that if this thing rotates by some angle theta, this arc length is spread out on that inclined plane. So the location of this object is going to be the radius times the angle that it's gone through. And therefore, the velocity that it has is going to be the radius times the angular velocity. And the acceleration that this thing has is going to be r times the angular acceleration of the disk.
Hmm?
So omega is what we call the angular velocity. So that's radians per second.
Okay.
Angle per time. Okay, so in particular, we know that this omega can be calculated from V over R. So if we wanted to, we could put the pieces together. So the kinetic energy is more than what it might appear. This piece of it is the kinetic energy of rotation, And the other piece of it is the piece of kinetic energy of translation. Okay. So once we did kinetic energy, then we talked about momentum. Right? So for linear momentum, it was the mass times the velocity. So for angular momentum, pretty naturally it's going to be I times omega. Remember that for linear momentum, if there's no external force, momentum is conserved. If there's no external torque, then angular momentum is going to be conserved. So kind of with a standard problem, angular momentum.
Okay.
It's just the symbol we use for angular momentum. Just as for crazy reasons, we use P for momentum. I have no idea why it's L. So remember when we were talking about conservation of momentum, we talked about this guy who's shooting a bullet. Everything starts at rest, so there's no momentum initially. When he shoots the gun, the bullet is going this way quickly, so there has to be recoil. He has to be going backwards slowly because he has a big mass. And the total momentum in the end has to be the same as the total momentum in the beginning, namely zero. So that same sort of thing should be true in terms of angles. So it's actually a lot easier to do it with angles than with linear momentum. So if I stand on this relatively frictionless surface so there's no external torque, if I twist this thing one way, I have to go the other way. Right? I have to automatically recoil. It has to work that way. So currently, this has zero angular momentum along this axis, but if I put this thing up, I have to go one way. If I put this thing down, I have to go the other way. Right? If I put it back to being sideways, I have to stop. And of course, if I drop this wheel, it's going to fall. Okay.
That was interesting.
Believe all of that, huh? So, for the momentum of this flying bullet, it's equal to the mass times the velocity. If I could somehow or other reduce the mass, the velocity would have to increase automatically if the momentum was going to stay constant. Well, you can't change the mass of something, so you can't do that with linear momentum, but how about with angular momentum? So we see that angular momentum, roughly speaking, is a mass times a radius squared. And while I can't change my mass, potentially I can change my radius. So if I make my radius big, omega has to be small. And if I make my radius small, omega has to be big. So this is the ice skater effect. So if I get some movable radius here, and I start spinning moderately slowly, if I bring these to my spin axis, I have to go slower. Put them out, have to go slow, fast. Try it again. So I got a big R, so I've got a small omega. If I bring these things in, I spin a whole lot faster. Yep. So an ice skater starts slow with her arms out. When she brings her arms in, she spins automatically a lot faster. Okay. So in terms of linear momentum, you know, kind of a standard example is the astronaut that's caught outside of the space station. And unless he throws something away, no matter what he does, you know, you can try swimming through space, it doesn't achieve anything. He's going to be caught outside of the space station. So is that similar thing true in angle? That is to say, is there nothing you can do to change your angle? So there's an experiment you can do. What you do is you take your wife's cat. You take your wife's cat and you drop it. And it's going to land on its feet. It's got probably some mouth here. So how can the cat change its angle just by flopping around, right? You can't do that with your position, but you can do it with your angle. So if I'm facing the wrong way, all I need to do is to take some part of my body. What? That didn't work. Why didn't that work? One more time. All I need to do is to take some part of my body and spin it and then stop it when I'm facing the way I want to go. So all you need to do, if you're a cat, is take some part of your body and rotate it, and the body has to go the other way. And when your feet are down, you just stop rotating your tail, and you'll have to stop. Them that don't survive. You've all learned about Darwin, I assume. Well, people are cruel. Okay, so you can cut off the tail of the cat. My in-laws actually have a tailless cat. But, you know, there are more limbs here, right? But, you know, a knife can be used multiple times. And eventually you reach, the well-known dead cat bounce, right? So it's just going to fall straight. It can't rearrange its position. Okay, so after we did F equals ma, after we did conservation of energy, after we did conservation of momentum, then we did free body diagram sorts of things. So how can we have free body diagrams in this rotational sort of situation? So let's go back to this sort of thing. So what we have here is something that has a lot of distance to it, a lot of a big moment of inertia, and we have a mass that is going to be falling. If we draw our free body diagrams, then we know that this mass has some weight and there is a string that's pushing it in the other direction. And if I use, kind of the normal idea that I'm going to take the motion as the positive direction, then I have the equation that m minus t is equal to the mass times the acceleration. Now, the only reason this thing is rotating is because there's a torque. There's a torque that's due to that tension. So the torque here is equal to this small radius times the tension in that string. And again, I'm going to choose the positive direction to be consistent. So I'm going to call that a positive torque, even though it's clockwise. That has to be equal to the moment of inertia times alpha. And just as with the thing rolling down the inclined plane, it must be that the distance this thing falls was arc length on this circle, and so that distance has to be equal to the angle that it's rotated times r. And it must be the case that the velocity is equal to the angular velocity times r. And it must be the case that the acceleration of this object is omega times alpha. So I can substitute in here that alpha is going to be the acceleration divided by r. If I now divide this equation through by t, I've got two equations and two unknowns. And if I want, I've made it up so that if I just add those two equations, the tension cancels, and I get that mg is equal to m plus I over r squared times a. Or finally, the acceleration of that thing falling is the weight divided by something like an effective mass. So what you really saw last time is if I is big, the acceleration is small. Yeah, looks like a mess. So this was mg all on top of m plus the moment of inertia divided by this radius squared. That's all equal to the acceleration.
So is that something we should be able to derive by ourselves, or is that just an equation we're going to be using?
So this is an example. So this is not something that you'd put on a box sheet of paper. Okay. This is like many of your homework problems, where you're going to be asked to work out the free body diagram for a complicated situation.
So could you go over then how you found all those left equations? Because you kind of just set them to each other and follow them out.
So if we think about what happens if I rotate this thing by an angle theta, what happens is the string that was on the spool is now going to be added to the fall list. And we know that the string on the arc is related to the angle that it turns by s equals r theta. So the distance this thing goes down is just theta times this little radius. And if that's true of the distances, it also has to be true of the velocities, because that's just distance per time. So it must be that the velocity is equal to omega times r. Another way of arguing that is we've said for a long time that the tangential velocity of something that's rotating is omega times r. And of course, that tangential velocity is is the rate at which the string is coming off the spool. And if it's true of velocities, acceleration is just the change in velocity. So it must be that the acceleration is omega. Oh, thank you. Is that what you were going to complain about? Yeah, yeah, I should have probably written them all in the same order. Then it would be even clearer, maybe. Yes?
And then, did you just write that x equals just to, like, see how they relate?
Yeah, I was just so we never use this. Okay. We never use that. But if this is true, then all of this stack has to be true.
Okay.
Because this is just changes in that, and this is just changes in that. So what can I do with 1 minute? Well, let's work one more problem. I probably can't work it in a minute, but maybe I can work it in two. So let's take a look at Atwood's machine, which is kind of a more complicated version of what we've just talked about. So let's say I have two masses that have a string that is stretched over this pulley. And we've done problems like this in the past, but we said that the pulley was massless. But now it's going to take something to accelerate this pulley. So that means that the tension in this string can't be equal to the tension in that string, right? There has to be some torque that's twisting it around. So if we pick kind of a consistent direction for everything, F equals ma for m2 is going to read m2g minus t2 is m2a2. And here, we're going to get T1 minus M1G is M1A1. And here, the twisting that's going to occur is because of these torques. This one's trying to push it one way. This one's trying to push it the other way. So we're going to have T2 minus T1 times R is I alpha. And of course, these things are connected by strings. So this acceleration has to be the same as that acceleration. And this angular acceleration has to be that same acceleration divided by r.
So how do you know to do that?
So what you're always doing is what you do with free body diagrams. You break it up into pieces. This piece can translate, so it's F equals ma. This piece can translate, so it's F equals MA. This one can't translate, so it's tau equals I alpha.
And that tau in this case is T times R?
So this is trying. This has a torque that is trying to twist it this way. This one has a torque that's trying to twist it the other way. The net torque, the sum, which looks like a difference, is this. In order to get a torque, I need a force times a distance.
Yep. Okay. And then that alpha is acceleration over that distance?
Right. So we've said right there that acceleration is alpha times r.
Okay.
Questions? Okay. Yes. So if I turns out if I divide this equation by R and then just add them, what I'll get turns out to be M2 minus M1 times G divided by M1 plus M2 plus I divided by R squared. All of that's equal to A.
Okay.